United States from before the Revolution, so let's take it from the early 1700s up until today. And I had to give you the history of the United States in 20 verses. You can imagine that this is only going to be hitting the highlights. And this is actually what we're going to do today. We're actually going to look at some few hundred years of history that has gone by from the time of Daniel forward, all in one lesson. So Daniel 11, it's Daniel's fourth vision. Now, most of this chapter is going to involve conflicts between two groups of people, and we're going to see this as we move along. The one group is going to be on our map here, in this area here. There was called the Northern Kingdom, or the King of the North, means north of Israel, which is over here. So north of Israel, you have the King of the North. South of Israel, which is the Egypt area, is going to be the King of the South. And throughout our passage, we're going to read the King of the North, the King of the South, the King of the North, the King of the South. And these are the two empires that are being talked about. Now, the King of the North actually can be a different person as we move through the chapter, because as you go generations down, it might be a different King of the North than was there before. Likewise, it could be a different King of the South. But they're going to be fighting each other. Now, why include this in the Bible if it involves two powers that are not Israel? Well, one of the reasons is that one or the other of these powers was controlling Israel during this time period, and the other is that Israel sometimes got caught in the middle of their fighting. Now, what's going to happen is, as you move through Daniel 11, Israel is going to take a more and more prominent role in what happens. Now, today we're going to be doing the first several verses. So Israel actually is not going to be a huge center of attention at the beginning. So it might be a little boring in the sense that I'm not sure what this has to do with Israel. But as the chapter progresses, Israel gets more and more involved to where our next session, Israel will be quite involved. So Israel then will get caught in the crossfires, the North and South fight. Let's see, we looked at some of these last time. This is some of the books that have history that covers this period of time. We looked at that last time. And now we go through the passage itself. Daniel 11:2 reads, "And now I will tell you the truth. Behold, three more kings will arise in Persia." These are three more after the current one over Daniel when he's given this vision. "And the fourth shall be far richer than them all. By his strength through his riches, he shall stir up all against the realm of Greece." And we learned that during Daniel's time, Cyrus was the Persian ruler. Darius the Mede was the ruler over the area that Daniel was in for a while, and then Cyrus was the one and only. There were three more kings after, and these are their names. We mentioned them last time. Incidentally, Darius the Great, who was the third, he actually is the origin of the bad blood between the Persians and the Greeks. And they had some fights. Darius the Great actually went to try to fight Greece in Marathon. And he got beaten extremely badly. Now, he had numbers on his side when he went to Marathon. He had the numbers. But the Marathoners, they were an enduring group, and they really fought back. And even though they were fewer in number, they beat badly Darius and his invading army. And they had to retreat. And in fact, that's where we get the race Marathon, because somebody from Marathon, according to legend, ran to Athens to report what happened. And the distance run was about 26.2 miles, the length of a marathon today. So that's where we get the word. So that's where the bad blood started between Greece and Persia, was in Darius the Great. But it wasn't until the fourth king, the next one, the strong and rich king, which is Xerxes, when he went to fight Greece. Now, this Xerxes is also known as Ahasuerus in the Bible, husband of Esther. You can read all about him in the book of Esther. So this is the fourth king that is spoken of in this verse. It was all future to Daniel. This is a prophecy, and he will stir up against the realm of Greece. It doesn't say he'll conquer. It says he'll stir up all against the realm of Greece. And you can read about it on Wikipedia if you want, about the Persian invasion of Greece, about King Xerxes and so on. This is real history, but it was foretold in the Bible. So Daniel 11:3, then a mighty king shall arise, who shall rule with great dominion and do according to his will. We find out in the subsequent verses that this is talking about Alexander the Great. This skips ahead about 100 years, and Alexander the Great conquered this great, huge empire. We talked about him last time also. Now, this phrase, he's going to do according to his will, is an important one. First of all, it's true to Alexander that he did anything he wanted. There was not a people he could not conquer. He never lost a battle. He did anything he wanted. But also it reminds us that even though this history is prophesied in Daniel's vision, nonetheless, people are responsible. God's not making people do these things just because he knows it will happen. And it's according to Alexander's will. God is not responsible for making people do what they're doing. He's telling them what will happen because of their decisions. Okay, so when he has arisen, his kingdom shall be broken up and divided toward the four winds of heaven. We looked at this last week. Alexander's son died before he ever got to rule anything. And in fact, after some infighting, the kingdom was divided between four generals, and they each took a slice of the pie, so to speak. And here are the four generals, kind of like the points on a compass, which would correspond to the kingdom being divided toward the four winds of heaven, kind of north, south, east, west, somebody gets a piece. But it doesn't go to his son, not among his posterity will it be divided up. So, well, then we focus, even though there were four groups that it was divided between, two of them are surrounding Israel. The Egyptian area here and the Syria and other areas up here. And this were controlled by a guy named Ptolemy in the Egyptian part and a guy named Seleucus up here in the Syrian part. And the large portion of what comes next in Daniel 11 will involve the fighting between these two groups. So Ptolemy the First, he ruled down there in Egypt. Now, I told you that as we move through Daniel 11, there are going to be different kings of the south. They're all called the king of the south, but they're going to be different ones. By convenience or coincidence or something, they're all named Ptolemy. Ptolemy the First, Ptolemy the Second, Ptolemy the Third. You can go down the line for about 13 or so of them. You have Ptolemies all the way down. Up in the northern, what's called the King of the North, this northern area here, which is north of Israel, you get to pick between Antiochus's and Seleucus's. So that's not bad. You only have to remember a couple of names, and then you have the first, second, and third of those. So Ptolemy claimed to be Pharaoh and was received as Pharaoh. He buried the body of Alexander, and All right. So Daniel 11:5 says the king of the south shall become strong as well as one of his princes. And Seleucus was actually his lieutenant back in the day when they were under Alexander. He shall gain power over him and have dominion. His dominion shall be a great dominion. This talks about how Seleucus ended up getting a great dominion through Antigonus coming in and attacking, and Ptolemy and Seleucus joining forces to beat Antigonus. Seleucus ended up getting a much bigger part of the pie. So his dominion shall be a great dominion. He's talking about Seleucus. So just to keep up with how I'm labeling things, The purple text, which will be on every slide from here on out, talks about who's ruling. That's going to remind us purple is the color of royalty, like the ruling party. So if you ever want to know who's ruling at the time of what I'm talking about, look for the purple writing. And I think I'm going to reverse these in the following slides to have the northern one on top and the southern one underneath. All right, anyway, so Seleucus was lieutenant under Ptolemy and appointed by Ptolemy to rule. Antigonus attacks, Ptolemy helps Seleucus, and Seleucus ends up getting a great dominion. All right, the next verse then says, at the end of some years they shall join forces, for the daughter of the south shall go to the king of the north to make an agreement. But she shall not retain the power of her authority, and neither he nor his authority shall stand. But she shall be given up with those who brought her, and with him who begot her, and with him who strengthened her in those times. All right, what is all of this talking about? Well, we have a change of power, change of leadership. So up here, instead of Seleucus, he's gone now, and we have Antiochus the First, called Soter, which is Savior. They all always took these grand names on themselves. So Antiochus the First, Soter, Savior. And down in the south, you have Ptolemy the Second. Again, we don't have to worry about the names. We just add a number onto Ptolemy. What happened? Well, Antiochus ends up attacking the Egyptians in what's called the First Syrian War. Now, there are six of these Syrian wars, but he ends up going down to attack and ends up losing ground. In particular, the land of Israel, or Judah, is now under Egyptian control. So this is an important thing in that it's actually affecting Israel. So Antiochus the First attacks, he loses ground, and now the Egyptians control the land of Israel. This is important to remember as we go along. Now, here you can read all about the six Syrian wars on Wikipedia as well. So here it is, the Syrian wars. They were a series of six wars between the Seleucid Empire and the Ptolemaic Kingdom of Egypt. All right. Now, what about all of this in Daniel 11:6? What happens there? Well, it turns out it's not relevant until the next group. Now, they have been fighting each other, as we just talked about, and we have a second Syrian war where the north again attacks, but they finally end up deciding to make peace. Now, here's how they're going to do it. The daughter of Ptolemy II is named Berenice, and Berenice, by this peace agreement, is going to be given in marriage to Antiochus II up in the north. And the idea is, and this was common in the day, that to make a peace treaty, you would intermarry the royalty, and that way it kind of maintains the peace. Well, so Berenice is shipped up to the Seleucid kingdom here, and Antiochus II marries Berenice. Now, this was good news to everyone, except the wife of Antiochus II, because part of the agreement is that she gets bumped out of the marriage. So she was queen, everything was great, her name was Laodice, and now the arrival of Berenice bumps her out onto the streets. Well, Laodice was not a woman to be messed with. We're going to find out why. But Laodice, interestingly, is the woman after whom the city of Laodicea was named. So Laodicea that we find in our Bibles in Revelation and in Ephesians that she's mentioned, that the city is mentioned, was named after this woman, Laodice, the queen. So she gets bumped out of the picture and did not like this at all, and Berenice marries. Well, it wasn't long before Ptolemy II down here dies. And after that, Antiochus II says, now that he's dead, I don't think I really am happy being married to Berenice. So she's out, and he goes to take Laodice back. Pretty tough thing, because Laodice poisons Antiochus. Yes, woman scorned kind of thing. Then she has Berenice and the child that Berenice and Antiochus had together killed. So that actually is a fulfillment of all of this. That is, this daughter of the south is given to the king of the north, but she shall not retain the power of authority, and neither he nor his authority shall stand, but she shall be given up with those who brought her. And there's a little story about that, but for time's sake, we won't go into so much detail. So Berenice, even though she is given to make peace, ends up losing out and does not continue on in fulfillment of this. So Daniel 11:7, but a branch of her roots, from a branch of her roots one shall arise in his place, who shall come with an army, enter the fortress of the king of the north and deal with them and prevail. Now we have to figure out what this phrase means, a branch from her roots. So my roots are my parents. So the idea is when you talk about our roots are my parents and back. So my roots go into the past, my branches go into the future, right? So my children are my branches, my roots are my past. So when it says a branch from her roots, it's kind of like a descendant of her parents or something like that. So maybe a cousin, or it turns out in this case a brother. So a branch from her roots is the parent's child, which would be her brother. So Berenice, it turns out Berenice's brother ends up coming to reign. So let's get our characters back here. We now have Ptolemy the Third in Egypt, the brother of Berenice. Now, he decides to avenge the death of Berenice. Laodice took care of Berenice and had her killed, and Ptolemy the Third, her brother, says, all right, that's it. I'm going to launch a war against the Seleucid Empire, the king of the north, and now that king is replaced with Seleucus II. If you're not into history, all right, this might be a little bit tedious, but it is in the Bible, so we follow it through. And as I said, Israel will get more and more involved as time goes on. Right now, Israel doesn't seem to be so involved. Well, during this campaign, Ptolemy carries home great wealth, and this is talked about in Daniel 11:8. He shall carry captive the gods of Egypt and their precious articles of silver and gold. He shall continue more years than the king of the north. Taking gods like what Nebuchadnezzar did was common in that day, and taking idols indicates total conquest. Seleucus II attempts to retaliate but fails. So it says, also the king of the north shall come to the kingdom of the king of the south, but shall return to his own land. And it turns out that there was an attempt to retaliate that didn't get anywhere. Seleucus II tried this. Part of the reason that he failed was some of his force was to go by way of the sea, and a lot of his ships were lost in a storm. It turns out his attempt failed, again, according to this verse. Now we come to Daniel 11:10. However, his sons shall stir up strife and assemble a multitude of great forces, and one shall certainly come and overwhelm and pass through. Then he shall return to his fortress and stir up strife. Seleucus II dies and is succeeded by his two sons. His first son doesn't last long, but his second son does. And let's see where we are here. His first son, Seleucus III, doesn't last long. So we get our new regime change to Antiochus III in the northern kingdom and Ptolemy IV in the southern kingdom. Antiochus the Great Well, there's a lot of information about what he did. First of all, he launches the fourth out of six Syrian wars. They fight two or three years. He gains some ground, but there's a stalemate for a little while. Finally, he ends up losing a major battle just south of Israel at a place called Raphia. And they finally end up having peace at about 211. Now, the big takeaway of all of this is that Antiochus III in this process takes over Israel. Now, for a long time, Egypt had control over Israel. These are time periods. By the way, every date that you see here is BC. Okay, every date is BC. So, for a long time during this time period, Egypt had control over Israel, and they, for a while, were kind of a benign power. They didn't really bother the people of Israel very much, the people of Judah and Jerusalem. As time went on, they did, though, and Israel had some unsuccessful attempts at fighting back. And Israel grew to kind of hate the Egyptians that ruled over them, this Ptolemaic Empire that ruled over them. So what happened when Antiochus the Great, this is not going to be Antiochus Epiphanes, he's still to come, but Antiochus the Great comes and takes over the land of Israel. One interesting thing that happened is that the people of Judah hated the Egyptians so much that when they were taken over by Antiochus, some of the people saw him as a good guy. Some people saw him as a savior, like he finally got rid of the Egyptians that were over us. There were other people in Israel that were not so sure that they liked Antiochus coming in. This turned out to be a big issue and divided Israel into two groups. So let's move through some slides here for a moment. So Ptolemy IV was a persecutor of the Jewish people. That's how they got to really dislike him. Some people view this verse having to do with a persecution of Israel. Some people look at it as a description of the loss at Raphia. So we can't be really exactly sure of that one. But there's this resentment that comes among the Jewish people to the Egyptians. And Antiochus goes back. He builds up his strength over here in the east. And Antiochus the Great finally ends up coming in the Fifth Syrian War to control Judah. Controls Syria, Judah, and Pan, which is Caesarea Philippi, is taken over as well. That's what's referred to by the fact that he'll take a fortified city and the forces of the south shall not withstand him. Now, this is kind of an interesting time in Israel's history because when Antiochus the Great took over, as I said, there's this split opinion as to whether he's good or not. It turns out that this split is a major one in Israel's history. Because there were some of the people, they were under Greeks for so long, and the Greeks were the people in control. They were the high society, if you will. Some people kind of went along with this trend, that is, it's good to adopt the Greek culture. That's where the upper class is. That's what's happening now. That's what's in vogue, is to do be Greek and do Greek things. And the other group was saying, no, we are not Greek. We are Jews. We are of Israel. We have our scriptures. We have our way of doing things, which is God-given, and this is what we need to do. It turns out that these two factions led to what would be the Pharisees and the Sadducees at the time of Christ. The Sadducees were the more liberal group, and they kind of were happy to adopt the Greek ways, and the Pharisees were the more conservative group. And they said, wait a minute, we don't like Antiochus, we don't like the Greek influence, we didn't like Ptolemy either, but we don't like either one of them. And so this split happened around the year 200 BC. So Antiochus controlled Jerusalem and was by many welcomed as a savior. And we'll do one more verse. Antiochus the Great is still in power in the north, and Ptolemy the Fifth now is in power in the south. And there's a peace treaty made in the year 197 based on the marriage of Antiochus's daughter to Ptolemy. And Antiochus's daughter is Cleopatra. She's the first in a series of seven Cleopatras, which we won't go into all today. We are not going to go into them. The seventh Cleopatra is the famous one, also known as Elizabeth Taylor. But this was the first Cleopatra, and she was given in marriage to Ptolemy down in Egypt to try to keep the peace. So we have up here Antiochus the Great. Down here, hidden by this big picture, is Ptolemy the Fifth. Now, Ptolemy the Fifth was a young guy. He actually got the kingdom as a little child, and he had his helpers to help him when he was a child, help him rule. But he grew now, he was kind of a teenager, and he's given this wife, Cleopatra, the daughter of Antiochus the Great. Now, Antiochus had a plan, and he instructed his teenage daughter to influence Ptolemy, this young Ptolemy, to the ways of the Seleucid Empire. So he's going to use his daughter to get the control, if you will, of what's going on down south in Egypt. So he sends Cleopatra down there to do the job. He underestimated his daughter, and he underestimated her independent thinking. So instead of influencing the young Ptolemy to be loyal to Antiochus, she says she's politically astute even as a young woman and realizes that the smart money is going with Rome. And she realizes the Roman Empire is the up-and-coming one, and she encourages him to court favor with Rome. Well, this doesn't stand well with Ptolemy. And we're gonna with Antiochus, and we're gonna find out what Antiochus does as a result of it next time. But this stone is called the Rosetta Stone, and this was a celebration. The inscription is a celebration of this marriage, and the Rosetta Stone was found about 1800. It was one of the greatest finds ever, because we didn't have a way of deciphering Egyptian hieroglyphics before this. But this marriage that was to an Egyptian ruler by Cleopatra from Antiochus the Great is celebrated here in three languages: hieroglyphics, Greek, and a third language, which Demotic language was a phonetic way of speaking Egyptian language. So it's fascinating because now we have the same text in three languages, one of them being hieroglyphics. So now we have our key to unlocking the understanding of hieroglyphics. Well, this lesson today, I realize, did not involve Israel a lot. But it's in the Bible, and what's going to happen is it's setting up a lot of involvement of Israel. So if you sat back and you got this history lesson today and you're like, history is not my thing, I never liked it in school, that's okay. We're leading up to a more spiritual problem that's going to be happening in Israel, and this is the background for it. So next time we'll pick up with what happened to Antiochus the Great and his retaliation against Rome for what his daughter did, and he finds out that his daughter was exactly right. Rome really is a force not to be messed with. But all that next time, for that, we'll end.